And welcome into the Tuesday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. Joe, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Very entertained by Houston-Tampa Bay last night. Didn't really see Chargers-Raiders, but Raiders, maybe we need to pump the brakes on the Raiders based on just the results that I'm seeing.
Well, they
what little I saw of it. Geno, whew.
They got Brady in the box. They'll figure it out.
Yeah, then you got Tom Brady in the box, and I just have to wonder, you know, why are other NFL owners not completely going nuts about this right now?
I don't know. They're not, though.
I mean, maybe they're behind the scenes. I'd like to hear, like, would this not be a perfect thing for Jerry Jones just pop off about?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's the other conference, but still. I mean, somebody. Who in the AFC would be the most, like, annoyingly out there owner? There just aren't that many, you know?
Probably the Jets guy.
Woody?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Get some Johnson & Johnson on this thing, yeah. Man. Let's go.
Let's get Tom out of the press box, please.
Get the headset off. Give him some Q-tips and get the hell out of the press box.
I did. That's the first thing. I woke up this morning and checked the score because I did not stay up to watch the Chargers and the Raiders last night. And the first thing I saw on Twitter was the picture of Brady in the box with the coaches with the headset on.
Yeah.
What's going on up here?
He's just, you
what's
know,
he doing?
He's just hanging around. But, hey, Ian goes 5-1 with his lock and freaking pigskin pick him, so – about time for Ian to move to Vegas.
I'd say you might on Fridays need to start listening to at 8:30 to Ian Safar and the picks that he makes. Ian, you're a ringer out there, man.
Good morning.
What's going on?
Oh, thank you, guys. Hey, you get lucky sometimes. I got got the under on this one, but I missed the over in the first Monday Night Football game. So
you missed one.
Split.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Split them here. The over unders. First time going with that. So maybe we'll keep going. Here and there.
Yeah, whatever you're doing, I'd probably keep it going. Probably keep it going.
Yeah.
Be my advice. Doing great this morning, guys.
Good.
Hope everybody's doing well.
Can't wait for your 0-6 week. It's coming.
Yeah. It will come, yes. I'm not going to deny that. Yeah.
We got a lot to get into on the show today. Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel will be with us at 6:45. We will get into the Tennessee Vols with him, plus some interesting injury updates from Josh Heupel yesterday that we'll sort through with Adam as well. Gentry Estes from the Tennessean will be with us at 8. We'll get into a lot of things with him. Of course, the Titans, Vanderbilt, their shot at, you know, potentially sneaking in there as a dark horse college football playoff team, or at least contender as the season goes on. Get his thoughts on all that coming up in the 8 o'clock hour as well. And, of course, the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad later in the program as well. Joe, we begin on college football today. And we'll get to our favorite coach's attempt at an apology here in a few minutes. But it's been pretty wild to this point in college football from a couple of different standpoints. I mean, it's not like there's been some huge run of upsets out there, but we've gotten some. And some teams that people thought were going to be maybe contenders for a national title heading into the year have not lived up to that to this point. Look no further than Clemson, who is 1-2 on the season. Hasn't looked good, save for maybe the first half against LSU, really, at any point this year. Even their non-conference game the week after the LSU game, they struggled for about a half in that game. And then they come out and lose last week to Georgia Tech. So they're not looking very good. The quarterback part of this is really fascinating. I mean, go back and look at like a preseason list of quarterbacks and who's going to win the Heisman Trophy. And, of course, it started with Arch Manning, and he's looked awful so far. Cade Klubnik has looked not very good so far. DJ Lagway at Florida has been horrific to this point in the season. So a lot of what we thought we knew heading into the college football season, Joe, we did not know, and it's not played out that way. What have you made of what we've seen to this point?
No, it really is. And David Ubbin brought my attention to this because he wrote about this yesterday, and I guess I hadn't thought about the entire picture, but it really is already just wild. Like you said, you mentioned Clemson and you got Notre Dame. I mean, those two teams, and I'm looking at like the athletic staff votes for national champion. Texas led the way with 12. They don't look like a national champion to me. They don't look like a playoff team to me. We'll see. But, like, if they play the way that they have consistently played, they're going to lose, like, four games. Clemson, like you said, 0-2. They don't have an FBS win. Notre Dame got votes. They're 0-2. Now, Notre Dame, you know, at Miami. Texas A&M at home. Those are good games, but who had them 0-2? I didn't have them 0-2. You know, other teams that have votes, LSU and Penn State, they're still alive. I picked Penn State, but if you've watched Penn State, you know, their quarterback, it seems like the theme is quarterbacks who were supposed to be something, and they are not at all that. Texas, favorite to win the national championship. Their quarterback does not look like a starting college quarterback right now. His name is Arch Manning. That's the best thing you could say about him right now as a quarterback. And, again, I'm not saying he's confined to that. It'll never change. But it's bad.
It's awful right now.
Like 10 straight incompletions, one of them a pick, against a team like they played last week is, and you watch it, it's bad. Cade Klubnik doesn't look like an NFL number one overall pick. No. Nussmeier is not playing as well as he's supposed to be. Drew Allard not playing as well as he's supposed to be. Penn State fans are pissed about Bo Prabilla. They want Bo Prabilla back from Missouri. you know, and on and on. And then you have the you know, on the flip side of that, okay, how about Miami? I mean, they look like a national championship contender to me. Who had Miami as a national championship contender? Other than hopeful U fans. Carson Beck, and this is a great lesson on all the quarterback stuff. Oh, maybe he is a top 10 quarterback now. After last year, he's the number one pick, and then he's a non-pick, and now, he actually is really good. You know, I mean, that team in particular stands out. I think Tennessee. I mean, Tennessee, not sitting here saying right now that they are, you know, a national championship level team, but like they're, to me, much better than I expected them to be. I didn't expect Oregon to be as dominant as they've looked. With Dante Moore, he's just struggled, but they look really good. And obviously, Florida State just out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And what they've done. Oh, and by the way, Alabama getting crushed by Florida State. I mean, these are just things that, off the top of my head, I mean, there's other stuff that's happened. But, of course, Vanderbilt. We got locally, we have two teams right now that, and of course, we're going to talk about them later in the show, but that are part of this. Like, holy cow, this has been a wild start.
It has. Now, we'll see. You know, people are talking a lot about parity right now. We'll see. Like, what does it look like by the time the college football playoff comes around and when the college football playoff gets going? Now, I think in the regular season, you are seeing a little bit more than that, right? It's one of the things I do like about the transfer portal, and it's not a long list of things I like, but one of the things I do like is, like, if you're a coach, particularly at a higher profile program that's got some money to it, you don't have to be bad for very long. You really don't. Like, you can, your roster can flip dramatically from one year to the next. And I think we're seeing that to the positive and to the negative in college football, and it's leading to some very interesting results. Another thing that I think this year is also showing me, if you can find a way to land a quarterback that's got a lot of experience at the college level, that is a very good thing. It's a very good thing. And I think Tennessee is seeing that firsthand right now. Obviously, Vanderbilt is seeing that firsthand with Diego Pavia. But like, even Oklahoma, right? Like, Oklahoma, you know, they had Jackson Arnold, this five-star recruit last year, and hopes were high heading into the SEC, and they just look bad on offense throughout the year. And they bring in Mateer this year, and they look good. Like, Oklahoma's a good team. Like, it's, you know, they're number 11 in the country right now. Yeah, number 11, and I think that they're going to have a really good year. So I just think if you can find that experienced quarterback via the portal, whatever, however you get them, it's a big thing in today's college football.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Yeah, like Tennessee. I mean, Utah also, Dampier is a guy they got who, you know, I mean, Indiana got he's hilarious, by the way. Have you seen this kid's interviews?
No.
Yeah, look up some of the – he had this interview post-game. I mean, it's like – he was like, and then on this pass, I threw – it's just – my God, what the heck is his name? He was at Cal last year, and he's good. And obviously they did that last year with Curtis Rourke from Ohio. So
Fernando Mendoza.
Mendoza. Yep. Oh, my gosh, he's hilarious. Yeah, Prabula from Missouri, of course. You know, it's interesting, too, because Auburn goes to Oklahoma this week. So it's like, you know, in the long run, if Jackson Arnold turns out to be amazing and you had this 1 year of Mateer and then you have to keep, right, getting on that kind of rotation, I mean, you know, that you could make the case for sticking with someone. But, I mean, this is how it kind of goes, you know.
It's well, Venables like, needed a year. Venables, like
yes, exactly. He needed and look, a huge part of also with them is, yes, Mateer for sure, but also Arbuckle, the OC, who, by the way, now there's all this talk that Oklahoma State might try to steal him as a head coach if and when they fire the mullet, so which still hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's an interesting – it's the do you get on the – you know, like homegrown quarterbacks. Ohio State has it, Penn State, LSU, Georgia, Texas, Illinois. Like a lot of these teams in the top 10 – and, by the way, we haven't talked about Marcel Reed, but he should be on anyone's Heisman list right now at Texas A&M. So the home there are a lot of homegrown quarterback sure. successes, but there's also a lot of – you know, a lot of these transfers that are making a huge deal, and yep. if you can get one, you know, it can be a huge difference maker for you.
I just think, you know, look at Georgia Tech. Haynes King, he feels like he's been in college since, you know, Casey Clawson was playing quarterback for Tennessee. But he comes in, and, you know, I don't know that Haynes King is like a high-level NFL quarterback when his college days are done, but what he does really well. And that Georgia Tech team, big win against Clemson last week. Again, I don't know how good Clemson is, but it's a big win for Georgia Tech. They're 3-0, and the way that they run their system is really fun to watch. So, like, you know, Haynes King's 24. Joey Aguilar's 24. Like, they getting these older quarterbacks running around. Like, it's if you can get them, it's a big deal for your team.
Yeah, when you can, and now you get the, you know, Pavia wins his thing, so now the JUCO stuff yeah. doesn't count, so – You got it. I mean, Joey Aguilar again. It's like it's almost a cliche. I mean, you know, around here we got Cam Ward, and with him, it's like, I mean, he was just not going to play. He was at this community college. He was the backup at this community college. Like, yeah, I guess I'll keep trying to play. And then sometimes you get, you know, you get to 21, 22. You played for years. You keep getting stronger in the weight room, and it's like, oh,
he's pretty good.
That dude can play. And of course, obviously, that's just not even on the table in the past. And to your point on parity, I agree. Like, let's see, right? Like, you know, I mean, I have no idea if that's how it's going to turn out. We may end up having a couple teams that are just dominant. Like, I'm looking at Oregon. I want to see them in more games. I mean, Ohio State. But at this point, I feel like you go through the top, you know, 15, 20 teams, I feel like there's a lot of matchups that could be good games, and yep. not one team right now that's like, oh, you're just not touching them. Not Alabama of some years, Georgia, Ohio State of some years.
Well,
we'll see.
Got to give a lot of credit to Iowa State navigating the schedule they've got. They got Arizona this week, and a big one there. You know, they're taking down South Dakota and Iowa.
I thought they were messing yeah. around this week with somebody for a quick minute.
They were playing Butch.
Oh, that's right.
Butch played him tough.
Well, you got Butch. I mean, when Butch comes walking in, we know that's not an easy game.
That's
so, I mean,
right.
They've navigated it to a 4-0 record.
Hey, so, I thought, mean, one second. They,
you say there's no dominant team. I'm here to tell you.
Yeah.
Iowa State.
I was worried
coach.
For a minute there.
That's a fair point.
But they pulled it out.
Watch out for the Cyclones. My goodness, are they? It's just on an absolute.
I talked a lot of trash about Iowa State football this year.
Well, that was a good rant. I mean, that was one of those things that's like, hey, let's not let this go, man. This guy.
Oh,
really,
I'm never gonna let it go.
This guy really said this out loud.
Yeah, I'm never gonna let it go. Each week, I on purpose, I'm like, let's go check out Iowa State, see how they're handling this schedule. 615-737-1025, our phone number. An apology yesterday from one of our favorite people in college football. We'll get back into that. Take your thoughts on college football. 615-737-1025. Plus, are there a couple quarterbacks around here that may mosey their way into the Heisman Trophy discussion. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Later today on ESPN 94.9 The Fan, the Nashville Sounds taking on Louisville. First pitch at 5:35. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds baseball on ESPN 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. Robbie and Rex Road talking some college ball. Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel will be with us at 6:45. We will get his thoughts on all things Tennessee. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. So, Joe, for your Rex rant yesterday, we heard a nice blow-up from our good friend Brian Kelly, LSU Tigers football coach, over the weekend at a reporter that said, and I quote after the game, Brian, what'd you think about your offense? How dare you ask that question? How could you ask a question like that? We just won the game. Like, Brian, all I asked you about was what you thought about the offense there, Bubba. So that made news, made the rounds over the weekend. And Brian Kelly, before he started this press conference yesterday, thought it appropriate to give a kind of sort of apology to said reporter. Here's what Brian Kelly had to say.
Yeah, and I guess that's the whole point, Paul. It's a mindset, right? You've just played an emotional game. You're coming in to questions, and the first one that you're dealing with is, you know, what's wrong with your offensive line? And so, I needed to do a better job of handling that question. That's on me. I've got to be better moving forward. Michael Cobble is an outstanding reporter. I apologize to him. But the mindset has got to be more about, you know, where are we right now? We just beat an SEC opponent in an emotional game and had five interceptions and one of our best defensive performances. So I just think it's a little bit of everybody, right? And it starts with me. I've got to be better, as I said. But I think we all have to understand what the mindset needs to be in a post-game press conference.
So that was Brian Kelly. I think it was that on Feinbaum? I think that was.
What does that need? What does it need to be, Brian?
Cheery. Coach. Sunshiny.
Coach, you look very good tonight.
I've got some gumbo for you.
What a tremendous win.
Sounds like you want somebody in that press conference. Somebody specifically in that press conference after the game.
A lot of people are saying we should send PK down there. That could be a great job for PK.
It really could.
Like just be reporter for hire.
Yeah.
Like press conference questioner for hire, and just send him all. Hey, how about little Gundy? Go stick the knife in there at Stillwater for a little bit.
Forget press conference guy like merchant for hire. Make him like the LSU beat writer. Him around all those people all the time. The Cajuns are out there tailgating. Got the Gator in the parking lot. Like he would be right at home out there.
Well, that
he'd
would,
love it.
That would be good too. That would be good. But, yeah, like I'm trying to think. I mean, just like to throw him out to Jim Harbaugh, you know, just to see what Harbaugh would like, how he would deal with it, you know. There's a lot of possibilities here.
You ever talk to your team about cheating, Jim?
Just don't send him to the Yankees because then he'll probably totally melt down and start crying. Screaming.
Aaron, you guys suck.
We may be onto something here. Let's just get him around like a national guy. Get PK into different situations here.
Different
sports.
Get just a universal press pass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just be like the nation's – because everybody, you know, that's what happens. I mean, I've heard it as a beat writer for a long time. That's what – it's like, ask the tough questions. It's like – so you just want like – when are you going to fire yourself? You know, it's like people always want the tough questions
there's
asked.
Some Titans fans that may want that question well, asked. Right now.
Yes.
Excuse me. When exactly are you going to be out of here?
Yeah. Can you leave, please? I guess it's good that Brian.
Well, my favorite part,
I guess
like,
it's good.
Like, I don't want to get on it too hard because he, like, but he had that. He had a press conference yesterday where he basically did the same thing where he started off with an apology, but then he, like, wove his way through an answer that was like, I don't think he really wants to apologize. I think he's just mad because people were pissed off at him of his reaction, but I don't think he really feels sorry about this.
Yes, a lot of people on this and including like in comments, like, cause I wrote a little thing on this on my message board thing this week, but cause there was this total argument back and forth in the message board, which is always a great indication of if a fan base is totally behind a coach, if they're totally happy with the coach, they're like, yeah, take his access away. Right. And if the coach is getting in fights and he's like an embattled coach, and usually it's like, how dare he talk to the media like
that?
It's very, very split, like very big time arguing amongst LSU fans about this, which is probably has something to do with, I mean, coming in the year, there's a lot of like, dude, Brian Kelly, let's go. And of course, are you ever going to have a good defense? And now it's funny because now it's their defense is really good and their offense is struggling. But again, like when he says right there in Feinbaum, we need to have have the right mindset. The mindset should be to ask questions about your offense. And you know what? There'll be questions about your defense and the things that were good. I promise you in that press conference, whether he melted down or not, all those questions were asked, good and bad. But like being the first in order, it happens
to
be.
What difference does it make?
Yeah. What is that? Like, I need you to fluff me for a little bit first.
Yeah.
Then ask me a real question.
Question five or six, yeah. We can get in there.
Yeah, which again, the fact that there's some seasoned media people who actually buy into that bothers me, but I've already ranted about it, so I guess I'll just leave it alone.
So coming up next, we are going to get into a conversation about some pretty good quarterback play here from the college teams we've seen so far. So good, in fact, that Joe is wondering, could this be something that we monitor all year long for a certain postseason award? We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel will be with us here in about 15 minutes. We'll get his thoughts on the Tennessee-Georgia game, his thoughts on where Tennessee goes from here in the aftermath of that loss. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Joe, as we mentioned, it is very early in the college football season. We are 3 weeks into it. So there's still a whole lot of information left to gather and a whole lot of big games left to be played this year. However, to this point, a couple of teams around here have been pretty good. Vanderbilt 3-0. They get a huge win at South Carolina over the weekend, as we discussed yesterday. Tennessee loses a classic to Georgia, and they've got to be feeling pretty good about their squad moving forward when you look at the rest of that schedule here. So we'll see how they handle that and what they do. Joey Aguilar, Diego Pavia, the quarterbacks for those teams, have been very good to this point. It's week four of the college football season coming up. So in some ways, you look at a Heisman conversation, you're like, well, where do you even start when it's this early in the year? However, I don't know that anybody has like jumped out there and is just running away with it. Like before the season, who's going to win the Heisman? Well, it's Arch Manning. He's definitely going to win the Heisman, right?
Like number one pick.
Arch Manning's going to win the Heisman.
Duh.
And if it's not him, it's going to be, Kate Klubnik. He'll win the Heisman. Like, oh, well, maybe DJ Lagway will step up and win the Heisman. Oh, okay. Well, we'll see. I think there's a lot of people right now, Joe, that you can put in the very early Heisman Trophy conversation. A lot.
Huge. It's a huge pool right now. No doubt.
I don't think you can have that pool right now without Diego Pavia and Joey Aguilar to this point, based on what they've done. So what do you make of those two, the start that they're off to, and how they factor into that discussion both now and as the season moves along here?
Joey Aguilar would be the leader had a kicker made a 43-yard field goal Saturday.
Yeah.
Like, in my mind, I believe that. I think you could make the case. You mentioned Mateer earlier. I think Castellanos so far for Florida State has done some ridiculous stuff. And those two come to mind right now. But Aguilar with the numbers, if you actually stopped the season and they beat Georgia, and he certainly is in New York. And look, Pavia right now, unlike some of these guys, Castellanos for sure. And then like Dan Pier and some of these guys, I mean, he has the momentum from last season too,
yep.
Which at some point that doesn't matter because obviously, like you just said, you just listed some guys who were at the top of all the speculative lists going into the season and now they're nowhere to be found. But Pavia certainly is in there right there. We haven't started doing the staff stuff at The Athletic. I assume that probably starts next week. You usually give it a few weeks and then start doing that. On3 did their staff poll. So, it stuns me that Aguilar is not on this. I understand they just lost that game. So, again, if you end the season now and you've lost 33% of your games okay? But it's like if you watch that game at all, he was tremendous. Certainly wasn't on him that they lost. They got, in order, Mateer, Castellanos, Carson Beck, Marcel Reed, and definitely what Reed did at Notre Dame, put him on the board.
Yeah.
Pavia, fifth. Then Dampier from Utah, who, if you haven't watched him play, he is, I mean, Utah, Texas Tech this week, I mean, that's the game that I'm, like, absolutely jacked for. That's a huge, that's going to be fun. Dante Moore of Oregon, he was at UCLA. So, to the point of, like, all the Nico stuff and everything, you know, Dante Moore's at UCLA looks like complete dog food. He goes to Oregon, and all of a sudden he's a Heisman, and he does. He looks fantastic. I mean, it kind of matters to be able to have people block, catch, run, play defense, coach, fans show up. I mean, the Rose Bowl has like 10,000 people. It's so depressing. Reuben Bain of Miami, Caleb Downs of Ohio State. Now we're getting into non-quarterbacks. And then Jerron Kiwi Sagapolatele, I think I said that right, or somewhere close to it, the Cal freshman who is freaking good. If anybody hasn't seen the Cal freshman play, go look it up. He is like Tua. He's the next Tua. And he is, like, I think from like the same town too, by the way. But like it's uncanny. He is so good. So there you go. That's their top 10. To me, Aguilar should be, I mean, I'd put Aguilar like right after Pavia. I don't have a problem with their top 5. I'd put Aguilar right after that, and Pavia, Aguilar like 5-6 right now.
I have the betting odds for the 2025 Heisman Trophy winner.
Okay.
Joey Aguilar is 8th on the list at the moment. Pavia is way down. He is way down. He's probably, you know, doing a rough guess, somewhere around 20th on the list at plus 5,000 odds.
I mean, there's still the presumption that Vanderbilt's got 4 or 5 losses ahead of it, right?
The favorite right now, Carson Beck at Miami at plus 750, according to FanDuel Sportsbook, followed by John Mateer, and then Gunnar Stockton at number 3 from Georgia.
Yeah, and those are, look, when you talk about odds, you have to also, like, you're projecting ahead and you're projecting win-loss record.
Sure.
It's a huge part of it. Miami looks loaded. Miami, like, again, South Florida is good. I mean, Florida is a talented football team that just went into LSU, who everybody's saying that's the national champ. You know, I was saying after Clemson. So it's like everything is like, it's just like with Vanderbilt. It's like, was South Carolina bad? LSU, is Clemson bad? But you know, like they are loaded without question. And so you can easily see my point there. They destroy South Florida. South Florida goes in and wins at Florida. That is a significant win for South Florida. They're still right there as a playoff team. But Miami mopped the field with them. I mean, so Miami might just run away with the ACC. And then Carson Beck, Mateer too, though. Oklahoma, that's going to be interesting. If they go through their schedule and they're like 11-1, 10-2 kind of team with the numbers he's going to put up, dual threat, all that stuff, he's right there. He's up there. I still have my questions about Florida State being as good as they look, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's – bottom line is, if you're a Tennessee fan or you're a Vanderbilt fan, you're feeling pretty good about your quarterback right now, right? Like, obviously Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's feeling good about their quarterback heading into the year, and I think he's better than he was a year ago, right? Like, I think if you watch him, the accuracy is better. I think throwing the ball down the field, it's better. So, like, Pavia, I think, is improved from last year to this year. And their team's better. Like, I think they've got more around him, I think. So, I'm really, like I said, they should be 5-0 heading into Alabama. And we're going to be talking a lot about Vanderbilt, Alabama heading into that game. I mean, it's going to be awesome here in a couple of weeks. So, I'm looking forward to that.
Don't jinx Vanderbilt.
Joey Aguilar has been very good to this point. And he wasn't perfect against Georgia. But, I mean, he put up almost 400 yards of passing, threw 4 touchdowns, and the offense scored 41 points against Georgia. So you look at the rest of Tennessee's schedule, there's not a game on there that you don't feel good, at least, about them winning or having a chance to win. Like, yeah, going to Alabama is going to be difficult. And, look, there are a couple sneaky ones along the way. Like, Mississippi State is off to a good start. I don't know how good they are, but Tennessee's got them on the road here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, don't sleep on it.
Tennessee has had some road stinkers. They had one last year against Arkansas. You can't have one this year against Mississippi State. You got Arkansas again at home. I don't overly worry about that, but we'll see.
Talon Green is playing really
well. He's very good. At Alabama, home against Oklahoma, on the road against Florida, and we're going to get into the Vanderbilt-Tennessee matchup at the end of the year because I'll just tease that conversation at 8 o'clock. Is there a chance? How big of a chance could we get to November between Vanderbilt and Tennessee, the last game of the regular season? And that's basically a college football play-in game, a playoff play-in game. Sounds crazy, right? But you look at Vanderbilt, they're pretty good so far, man. Like, they roll off a win against Alabama or a win against Texas, and their schedule could set up to where that game absolutely means that at the end of the year. So, I think if you're a Tennessee fan or a Vanderbilt fan right now, you're feeling great about quarterback. And a Tennessee fan specifically, like, you had no idea what it was going to look like heading into this year. And it's pretty clear three games in that the offense is operating at a level that it really has not even approached since Hendon Hooker was there in 2022.
Yeah, absolutely. And the numbers are going to be there. And so I agree, Mississippi State's dangerous. Oklahoma is a totally different looking game. But, you know, being in Knoxville, I mean, that's, you know, that's the thing. It's like one of those games where, boy, by then you sure hope you have, like, you know, your best corners, for example, in a game like that. But, yeah, Aguilar is a revelation, and he right now deserves to be up there. You know, with Pavia, and, of course, we were talking yesterday real quick about, you know, Brazel, wide receiver one, Todd McShay talking about that.
Yeah.
People talking about Aguilar as a pro prospect. Never heard any of that before this year. I'll ask you, too. Like, last year, all the stuff Pavia was doing, it was great. It's so much fun. This offense is fun. He's fantastic. I didn't really take him seriously as an NFL quarterback. Has he gotten himself to the point where he could be, like, in a camp and be a backup in the NFL?
Well, I'll tell you what stands out to me about him right now, and I think we're still early enough in the process of this season where I want to see if it holds when they get into SEC play, like, deep into it. But let me read you a number from him that really jumps out to me this year. You know, 2022, his completion percentage at 53%, 60% in 2023 at New Mexico. His last year at Vanderbilt, for all the good that he did last year, his completion percentage was 59.4. It's not very good. Right now, again, it's early. We'll see if it holds. Right now, his completion percentage is 73.5. Like, it's a massive jump. So we talked about the accuracy getting better. I think that's part of it. I think they've schemed some things up to where he's getting some, I mean, just it's right there, make it happen looks. It's another year in the offense. He's got better talent around him. So we'll see if that holds up. But he's clearly more accurate this year. So I think that's a big deal. You know, as far as an NFL guy, we'll see. I mean, look, at this point, I don't know that I really want to doubt Diego Pavia.
Yeah.
But really, the only thing that I think is going to make that problematic is if you're an NFL team, and you just start looking sheerly at his measurables, like the size.
Yeah, he's little.
Is that going to scare you?
He's little, and he doesn't have a huge arm,
right?
By any means. I guess it's like you could kind of make the comparison to a Stetson Bennett,
right?
Right, Stetson Bennett, who was obviously surrounded by ridiculous talent, but little guy running around, never should have been. You know, no one ever thought coming out of high school he'd be there. But, I'm with you. It just seems like some of his downfield throws, he just has the touch on them right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think he's moved himself into that possibility, just like Aguilar has. Guys who, and again, I'm sure Aguilar was not on anybody's board. Pavia, I don't think so, not much. You know, I remember last year I asked Brugler about it, and he's like, well, you know, it'll help him to get in the Senior Bowl or whatever and see what he can do. That was, of course, before we knew he'd have another year of college football.
Right.
Which is good for college football to have another year of Diego Pavia.
Yes. Yes, it is. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel will join us coming up next. We'll get into all things Tennessee with him. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. Talking some Vols, and to help us do that, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our buddy Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel. Adam, good morning. How are you?
pretty good. How you guys doing?
Doing great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. Obviously, Adam, and just an awesome game on Saturday between Tennessee and Georgia. Tennessee comes up short in overtime, and we can get into a couple different reasons as to why that game got away from him. But what, I guess, kind of stands out to you the most on the Tennessee front in the aftermath of that game against Georgia?
The offense is for real. Joey Aguilar's for real. Chris Brazel, Mike Matthews, Braylon Staley, the wide receivers are for real. It was obviously the loss. You don't want the loss. I think by the end of the year, if Georgia is as good as we think it is, this may be the quote unquote best loss of playoff contenders if Tennessee is in the playoff hunt. You know, the old your best win and your best loss or your worst loss. I think this would be in the category of one of the best losses in the country. And now I know Tennessee fans don't want to hear that, but it helps you down the road, or it could help you down the road if you take care of business. The offensive part of it, I mean, I think we all thought maybe this offense would be pretty good from what we saw in the Syracuse and ETSU games. But, you know, you have to consider the competition. We knew we would get some kind of answer in the Georgia game. I mean, just to go back last year, I know there's always the Joey versus Nico talk and all that. A lot of the things that I saw coming out of the ETSU game was, you know, wow, Joey threw for more yards and a half than Nico did in this many games last year. Well, Nico threw for 300 and something yards and a half against Chattanooga last year. So what Joey did against ETSU, Nico did and then some last year. So there was still a question of, is this offense good? Is Joey Aguilar good? Or was he just good against bad teams? And we got the answer. I mean, if you can put up almost 400 yards passing, accounted for 5 touchdowns, total offense was about 500 yards, 41 points. If you can do all that on Kirby Smart's defense, which still has a ton of talent, you could do that against any team on the schedule. So the way that I come out of this, aside from the loss, is I say, okay, this has the makings of we can look at this offense now as similar to the 2022 offense. And if you remember that season, you went into every game and said, I think they can score 40 on this team. And it didn't really matter the team, except for Georgia that year. And so I now look at this and say, at Mississippi State, they can put up 40 there. Arkansas at home, they can put up 40 there. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But they did it against Georgia, and so I have every reason to believe that they have that capability now.
So Sparkles and I call Adam Sparkles.
I'm sure he loves that.
Yeah, he loves that. We were in the press box after the game Saturday, and he's like, did you have like a big issue with like the sequence before the field goal? Because they're all you immediately start dealing with what, like your mailbag, right, after the game?
Yeah.
So okay, so catch me up, because we talked about this some yesterday, Adam. That and of course the lack of aggression after the turnover. Have Tennessee fans calmed down? Are people still mad at Josh Heupel?
No, they've gotten over some. I think the second wave of criticism died down because people looked back and said, well, I mean, that coach also called the offense that put up everything that I just said, the 41 points, 500 yards. And I think another thing is, I mean, there's two kinds of mistakes that a coach can make. There's one where everybody in the stadium can say, dummy, we all knew that. Why did you do it that way? I mean, I hate to bring up old wounds, but the Titans.
The
opener,
Titans, yes.
Right, yes, yeah. Dummy.
That's malpractice.
We all just Googled the rule, and you don't know the rule, right? That's one way to make a mistake, where it's just a clear mistake. Another one is when there's some logic to it. You could do A or you could do B, and maybe this fan wants to do A and the coach did B. Running the ball right after that turnover, the strip sack, run it three straight times. You would like to have seen a pass on third down there, but if you look back at the film, the run that was called was there. A block was missed. On the set up the field goal, yeah, you would say, well, why not run another play to get it closer? Or, you know, you had a few seconds there, but they weren't going to do that. They were just going to try to center the ball. So they could have a little better angle of a kick. And you know, some of what Josh Heupel did was just say, hey, we just lost 5 yards on a false start. What if we lose 5 yards again? What if there's a hold, another penalty? The next play to set up the field goal at the end of regulation was not going to be to gain yards. It was just going to be to get the ball a little more to the center of the field. So there's going to be a loss anyway. So I think at some point he said, can Max Gilbert make this kick? Yes. So let's go make it. And he didn't. And that's just how it is.
So, Adam, on the injury front, you've got really some comments from Heupel yesterday on David Sanders that I don't really know what to make of, talking about a unique injury and the time frame basically being unknown, and he could wake up one day and be ready to go, and there it is. So we'll see what that looks like. What do you make of that, and what do you think is a realistic timeline for when Jermaid McCoy can be back playing corner for this team?
I mean, from what I understand of the David Sanders, the unique injury, it's shoulder, but it's you have a stinger. I've never had a stinger, but, you know, it's neck, shoulder, nerves. That's why it's unpredictable. It can be there one day, gone the next. You can have a loss of strength there, and it has to be evaluated. So it's a weird injury. I mean, players play with stingers quite a bit at the NFL level especially. But they're all different and weird. Until he's back, I won't believe he's back. He may play against UAB, but I don't know that I would bet on it. Jermaid McCoy, I mean, the way that I asked it yesterday, I asked Josh Heupel on the presser. I said, is it way too optimistic to think Jermaid may be back before the bye week or before the off week? And Josh's response was the first off week. Whoa. Because it's the second off week in November.
The break between the bowl game?
That's right. Yeah. 2027. I think they've liked his progress behind the scenes. But if usually ACLs, a good prognosis for an ACL for an elite athlete is about 9 months. Which for Jermaid would be October. So I think they would love to have him back, you know, Mississippi State. Then he could go into the off week and then play Arkansas, Alabama. They just, from the tone of Josh Heupel's response, it didn't sound that way. And he was actually very open about injuries yesterday because it's UAB week. It's UAB week, and also there was so much flack on message boards and fan base and all that about the David Sanders thing, so he kind of had to answer it. But to me, it feels like the goal should be to try to get Jermaid back before Alabama. And if it doesn't happen then you start to question, you know, if and when it's going to happen. Because I think a lot of this, too, with Jermaid may come down to, is this a playoff team or not? Because he wants to be back right now. I'm sure his representation, his agents are saying, well, if this is not a playoff team, you know, how does that affect your draft status? Are you a first-round pick if you don't come back? Or your first-round pick if you come back and you don't play well because you're not healthy? You know, there's a lot of questions in there. So I think Tennessee should hope he's back by Alabama, but we'll see.
Like you said, Adam, the offense for real. Aguilar, I mean, to me, he should be a Heisman guy at this point. The offensive line pass protection against Georgia I thought was fantastic without Sanders. We know who the receivers are. I like their backs, too, and they have another rotation. But I got to say, I'd like to see a game where Star Thomas gets like 18 carries and see what that may look like. Is this a little bit of a situation like Dylan Sampson when he was younger and you could kind of see he just has a little more juice than the other guys?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I think you got to account for a lot of different things of who's the best pass protector, and I think that's probably Deshaun Bishop. Who do they trust the most coming into the year? That was Deshaun Bishop. That's why he started. I've said before, I thought Deshaun Bishop was sort of a Jabari Small, and you're making the same analogy there. I wouldn't mind seeing Star Thomas get it more. I wouldn't necessarily take away from Deshaun. I would probably take away carries from Peyton Lewis, which is what they did the other night. But you've always got a balancing act there with, you know, I mean, these coaches these days in the portal era, what does that mean in the offseason? You know, does Peyton Lewis start to get antsy and look at the portal at the end of the year if he's pushed out of the rotation? Star Thomas would be gone next year, so maybe not. But you always wonder about those things, about how keeping different people happy. I'm not saying Peyton Lewis is unhappy at all, but you always have to weigh those things.
Adam, last thing for you here. What did you make of Caleb Herring, his game Saturday, and what that could mean for Tennessee's pass rush as they dive into SEC play coming up?
There's this point in time when every one of these edge guys for Tennessee sort of, you see it. They flash and you think, okay, this is the next guy. And that may have been the game for Caleb Herring. I mean, it was Byron Young, obviously blowing up the Titans the other day. It was James Pierce. It's Joshua Joseph. And Caleb Herring was the number one recruit in the state of Tennessee like 3 years ago. And so you knew he had the talent to be the next guy. I do think that was probably the flash of him being the next guy, the edge guy. And by the way, Jordan Ross, the former five-star, looked good too. They just keep on churning them out. And that position on defense is just, they get sacks, they get TFLs, and it looks like Caleb Herring is the next guy in line.
Well, Adam, awesome stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. We will be excited to watch the rest of the year here, what this means for Tennessee, and we will talk to you soon, my friend.
All right, guys. Y'all have a good one.
Yes, sir. Hey, you buddy. Too. Adam Sparks, our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. We'll take your thoughts on what Adam had to say. We will get into some comments from Brian Callahan and the Tennessee Titans coming up next as well. The Rex Rant with Joe Rexrode coming up at 7:45. All that ahead, Robbie and Rexrode, 102.5 The Game.